Hello.
Hey, hey, how you doing?
I'm very good, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's actually my first ever Twitter space. It's quite exciting. I didn't expect it to be about this. Like I saw the stories and I just thought, wow, that's something for the end of the season or something to kind of like drone on tediously for the next 3 months. But yeah, took about an hour for him to be sacked.
I know, not only is it your first Twitter space, I think it's your debut on the Gegenpressing podcast of sorts.
Yeah, Manuel and I were talking about this last week, and yeah, I did promise to come on, but like again, I thought we'd plan it a little bit,
What's the expression I'm thinking of? I was going to say chariots of fire. That's not the word. Baptism of fire. There we go. That's the expression.
Yeah, it's definitely not charity so far. No.
I see Manu is in here. He's currently down as a listener. I've sent him two requests to join us as a speaker, but he's on his holidays. He's probably had a few glasses of wine. He's probably fumbling around with his phone at the moment.
Okay.
But while we wait for him, I'll obviously just introduce you to anyone who doesn't know, which I'd be amazed if they don't. But you're, of course, Seb Stafford-Bloor, the fantastic football writer for The Athletic and the Tifo YouTube channel, the Tifo podcast as well, which I enjoy every week. I must say, one of my go-to podcasts, that's for sure, especially when you're on it, Seb. And all-round German football guru, is that a fair way to describe
No, German football beginner, Stefan. So
it?
like I'm kind of I moved to Germany a couple of years ago with my wife, and I'm kind of finding my way, learning as much as I can and getting around the country as quickly as possible. But no, I've barely scratched the surface, but I'm having a great time learning and finding out about German football. It's quite superficial, my knowledge, but you know, it should be good enough for this conversation.
Right, same course. I've got on. I've got Manu messaging me saying I can't get on, but we'll give him a couple of more minutes until I've sent him a co-host invitation, so hopefully he gets that.
He's still there as a listener. I'm looking at it
He's
now.
lurking on. It's like he's kind of
Yeah,
stand.
he
I
is.
feel like he's kind of standing like off to the side of the stage behind the curtain, just kind of glaring at us.
Yeah.
Well, you and I both just try and like make up for the kind of airtime at the moment. Oh,
It's okay. All
a
right,
rare man,
so here we go.
a rare Manuvé suddenly appears.
There he is. There he
Did
is.
that work? Did that work?
You're
Apparently, you
here.
can only do this on your phone. So here we are.
Well, there we go. Should we just jump straight into this then?
Yeah, I
Let's do it.
guess.
Let's do
You
it.
should jump. Well, first of all, Seb, hey, how's it going? It's been a while.
Hey man, it's good. Yeah, I last saw you in East Berlin about 6 months ago, didn't I? So yeah.
Yeah, I guess this is not really how we imagined having you on the first game pressing show, but here you are. probably the biggest news you can have. And isn't it nice of Bayern to interrupt everyone's holidays, Stefan?
Oh, I know. So yeah, just some context here. I'm not quite sure what you were doing this evening, Seb, but just off some context, Manu and I planned a week off because he's currently, I think you're currently actually quite literally in the cabin in the woods somewhere outside Vancouver. And I'm actually staying at my parents' house right now because I'm flying out of Glasgow tomorrow. I live outside, I live on the other side of the country actually now.
I'm off to Amsterdam for a stag do, actually, of all things, which the least said about that, the better. So very, very last minute. Both of us nowhere near prepared or at our desks or anything, really. I don't even have a computer in front of me to check the news as it comes through. So that's how we go. But that's just how we roll, I suppose, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, so you gave me an extra 10 minutes to jump in. I did speak to some people. I did this all while I was actually on a bike ride when this happened and and had to interrupt it and actually send out some messages. So I think I got a little bit of a picture of what happened here.
Okay.
But so should I just jump in with this then?
Yeah, tell us what you know.
Okay, so it's done. Yeah, it went as quickly as you possibly can. The story leaks, of course, and then I guess it took like another 45 minutes to an hour for people to get it confirmed. Nagelsmann himself did not know when the story first leaked, which I think is crazy. Imagine you find this out on Twitter and it's like you're on
Yeah.
holiday yourself and this is how you find out. I think what really was the big thing here, so there's two things here that stand out to me. I think it's a first of all, it was the result against Leverkusen, where Bayern Munich tactically got schooled by Javi Alonso, right? And I think it wasn't necessarily the fact that they lost the game, but it was the manner they lost it. And I think it really worried them what that could mean for what is a very important fixture against Man City, right? It's not even the match, the results in the Bundesliga. It's more how what is this going to do when they play a big team like Man City? Are they going to get smashed because Nagelsmann is being outcoached? And then the other thing, and this is not done quite yet, although seeing how quickly this moves this evening, the availability of Thomas Tuchel, who has been talking to other clubs, including Tottenham, right, meant that Bayern Munich felt they either do this now or they don't do this at all. So I think this is sort of where we at. With what I've got, was able to put together 45 minutes while being on a bike in the middle of the nowhere on Vancouver Island in the woods. So Stefan, I'll let you take
That's just bragging though, isn't it? That's just like that's flaunting a cosmopolitan lifestyle. That's I feel like I've now got a picture in my head of Manu like in this beautiful idyllic country road and his Apple Watch suddenly starts buzzing and he just kind of falls off his bike somewhere.
I did almost fall off on the side,
Yeah, so like by comparison, like when Stefan like messaged me to say, do you want to come on the spaces? Like I was in bed and I said to my wife, oh, I'm just gonna go next door into the office to do a Twitter spaces. And she was like, you're gonna do what? What are you gonna do? And I was like, I kind of mumbled something and I got sent away, basically. But yeah, it's not cycling in like in Vale or wherever he is. It's not the same thing, like northern Germany in March.
it's just the kind of occupational hazard of being married to a sports journalist. I'm afraid at times you do have to just kind of rant and do silly things. But anyway, let's get back to the topic at hand. Before we kind of jump into the Thomas Tuchel side of this, Seb, let's talk about Nagelsmann because there'll be a lot of kind of Bayern Munich fans and just fans in general kind of just absolutely baffled by this. They'll wake up maybe tomorrow morning, have no idea how this happened. Let's try and conduct the post-mortem here. What are your thoughts on if, I mean, nothing's been confirmed yet, we should say that, but assuming the news comes through at some point, what was your initial reaction? Do you think it's justified? Can you understand why? If not, why? Blah, blah, blah. Give us your thoughts.
Okay, so in no particular order, I understand why, because in my mind, there's always been something slightly uneasy about this. Like one of the things that surprised me when I moved over was just like just how total the focus on Bayern Munich is from the German media, and it felt like the types of stories that were sort of the types of negative story written about Nagelsmann. Were kind of instructive about where this partnership was heading. Like, do you remember back at the beginning of last season when there was a kind of general disgruntlement about the way he was dressing in the technical area? Do you remember that story? It's quite a while ago, but that's the kind of story that doesn't come out if things are good. And also, I remember
Raph Honigstein over at The Athletic wrote a really good piece about Nagelsmann's response to the Gladbach loss and how his kind of maturity level had been exposed. Mm. And Mané talked about also the loss to Leverkusen, which it was like from a technical perspective was really disappointing, and I thought Leverkusen dealt with them quite easily. Mm. And it's a funny Leverkusen side, like they're capable of being everything. There's a full kind of rainbow of performances under Alonso at the moment. They're very, very unpredictable. At the same time, I thought the way that Nagelsmann spoke about his team after that game was quite dangerous for someone in his position. Like you can be quite disparaging, I reckon, not just at Bayern Munich, but at any big club. If you've got a strong power base, if you've got the kind of the trophy tonnage and the reputation to sort of to back that up. But with, and this has been true for a lot of coaches across Europe, like Thomas Tuchel's been there since he left Chelsea lurking. Mm. And if you have the opportunity to appoint someone like Tuchel, you're going to do it at some point, really, or you're going to be tempted. Mm. And so it feels like all of those things combined makes me think, yes, it's a terribly bold decision, and it doesn't feel very Bayern Munich to chop a manager in the on the kind of a Thursday night in the middle of an international break. That feels quite odd, but I get why it's happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting you mentioned that. As you were talking there, it made me think that Thomas Tuchel is to the Bundesliga kind of what Mauricio Pochettino seems to be to the Premier League these days. That whenever a top manager begins to kind of struggle, those rumours just kind of begin to surface. It's like, oh, well, Pochettino could replace him. You never know. And that seems to be what happened. I kind of agree with you, but in terms of kind of Nagelsmann's fit at Bayern Munich, we've talked about this in the podcast a few times this season in terms of how he doesn't really conduct himself quite like a Bayern Munich head coach. You know, he's not Jupp Heynckes. You know, even someone like Hansi Flick, who obviously had his issues behind closed doors at Bayern, still kind of conduct himself very differently on the pitch. And I completely agree with you in terms of kind of the media coverage of Bayern. I think we were actually talking about this recently as well in terms of the minutiae of stuff that it does get covered in terms of, you know, a blow-by-blow of how players are training, how many players were smiling in Oktoberfest photos, things like that. You know, just the really bizarre stuff that does get kind of dissected into bonkers things. But the interesting thing
sorry, Stefan, do you remember, because you mentioned Oktoberfest, do you remember that series of pictures? I forget what the recent result was, but like it was the day after, and they came out in their traditional Oktoberfest garb and the normal thing they do at the beginning of beginning of it every year, and it was like there was a sort of like it was like looking at autopsy photos, wasn't it? Because it was a kind of like, oh, look how unhappy Oli Kahn is today.
We were together when this happened.
We remember were. It was the loss against Augsburg, wasn't it?
Yes,
Manu?
It was.
Yes, it was.
We were together.
Yes, that's exactly right. And it was bizarre because it was like, well, what do you expect? Like, you know, you'd be marched out in front of the press and you've just lost to Augsburg. And Dortmund had won that day, and that felt significant at the time. And it's just an incredible level of scrutiny, which I wasn't prepared for. Sorry to have interrupted you, Stefan.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right, and it adds perfect context to what we're talking about here. And I think there's kind of two separate things here for Nagelsmann. There's the stuff that's happening on the pitch, and there's the stuff that's happening off the pitch. And, you know, Nagelsmann obviously has kind of his own brand, which he's kind of had to build up himself. And I think you could probably make a strong point that he's had to build it up from nothing because he wasn't a former player. You know, he started off as a youth coach at 1860, if I'm not mistaken, before moving to Bayern. And then obviously at Hoffenheim and RB Leipzig. But even there, he was known as, you know, one of these kind of, I can't remember the expression, was a calculator manager or some disparaging term.
That's the term.
I've always kind of had the impression when you do watch him on the touchline and the way that he dresses and the way he behaves, it's almost like he's having to compensate for that maybe lack of profile that an ex-player maybe would have by right. And I think that maybe has meant that he has kind of looked out of place at Bayern at times, you know, all the things we've talked about there. And of course, the way he does react to results and things like that. But while I do agree with that, I do kind of feel like if we actually take what he's done on the pitch this season, I feel like maybe it's still a little harsh, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, we can't forget the fact that, You know, the club lost Robert Lewandowski in the summer, well ahead of schedule. You know, I think when Nagelsmann took on the job, he realised that he would have to maybe contend with the day without Robert Lewandowski. But the manner in which that was pushed through in the summer, I think, probably left the club as a whole on the back foot. And Nagelsmann had to kind of, you know, deal with that. And I think he has, for the most part, done what he can. I mean, of course, he tried this kind of strikeless formation at the start of the season, didn't quite work out. And he kind of ended up relying on Choupo-Moting. And, you know, on paper, you can definitely argue, you know, well, Choupo-Moting's not kind of world-class striker. Bayern Munich can't rely on him forever. But he did help them get past PSG. He's helped them get past Barcelona in the group stages and things. So, and then even if you kind of want to just kind of look at the results, they're still arguably on course to probably win the Bundesliga this season. And the most bizarre thing in all this is that I think they probably look maybe the strongest team in the Champions League this season, except for maybe Manchester City. So that side of it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know. Manu, do you want to jump in? Because you haven't had anything to say recently.
Well, I think a lot of, and Sepp kind of mentions it, I think a lot of what's happening here has to do with things that are not necessarily happening on the pitch. The results are a big part of this. Don't get me wrong here. I think, you know, what they are unhappy with is that Bayern Munich has been playing these fantastic games. You mentioned the Champions League here, where they have been almost unbeatable, right, at times. And we're talking about them beating some of the biggest teams in Europe and doing it so quite easily. But then you had the Gladbach game, you had the Leverkusen game. And I think all of that would have been excusable if he would conduct himself a little bit different off the pitch, right? We laughed quite a bit when those Oktoberfest pictures came out, right, Sepp? I thought it was like the funniest thing ever. But I mean, there's quite a bit to this, because there's obviously, this was a marriage of convenience for quite some time. And those photos, you know, they're kind of like the postmortem of a wedding, like of a marriage, where you look at that picture and you can tell that the couple isn't happy anymore, right? Yeah. But the results were still quite there. But, you know, even in the summer, last summer, when I was on the road with Bayern Munich in the States, there was a few times that Nagelsmann said certain things and it would upset the Bayern board, because he upset some other manager. Remember when he, for example, went out and said he wants Harry Kane, and then Bayern Munich had to apologize to Tottenham because it's a player who's not under contract at Bayern. You know, and Bayern Munich usually do that kind of stuff. But he did it anyways. Then last year, there was that story where he made fun of firefighters, and he then actually went out and volunteered for a firefighter brigade, right? Mm-hmm. Because he said, like, we're not the Freiwillige Feuerwehr, we're not a voluntary fire department, right? It's just certain things. Like, if you're a Bayern Munich coach, you have to be almost like a statesperson, right? And he was none of that. And I think if he had been... Stefan mentions Hansi Flick, that's a great example, or Jupp Heynckes, or Ottmar Hitzfeld, right? Yeah. Those people, when the results weren't right, they conducted themselves in a stately manner, and he didn't. And it's almost like there was always some sort of drama, right? Mm. I mean, the most recent thing is the Manuel Neuer stuff, right? Where he axed Manuel Neuer's buddy, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. I think it all adds up, and I think it's almost they weren't happy with the results on the field, and there were certain things that they were rightfully concerned about. But I think quite a bit of the story is also what happened off the field, and I think there was. I'm curious, right? Sometimes it's like good to talk about this kind of stuff and get responses, but this went so quick, and I'm actually kind of curious what will happen when this becomes official, right? And we have to point this out. This has not been confirmed by the club yet officially. Mm. And I'm really curious to see what the statements from Oliver Kahn and Hasan Salihamidžić are going to be like. Yeah, yeah. Because I think you're going to be able to read quite a lot into what they thought was the final straw, right, that broke the camel's back. And I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that kind of intrigues me as well is the timing and the apparent or reported interest in going straight for Thomas Tuchel here, because if you kind of take like a 10,000 feet view of this and you kind of look at it like moving kind of board pieces across a board or chess pieces across the board, Bayern apparently reported, according to Bild, saying that, you know, they were very nervous about maybe Thomas Tuchel being enticed to a club like Real Madrid or Tottenham. And I do kind of wonder if you could maybe even go as far back as maybe Jurgen Klopp, who, you know, is a head coach that Bayern have always admired. I think they maybe always thought once he's done what he wants to do at Liverpool, we could entice him here. But, you know, instead of maybe kind of giving up at Liverpool, he decided to double down. He sort of kind of, you know, renewed his interest in the club. He's not leaving Liverpool anytime soon, unless something dramatic happens, like new owners or whatever else. So that then shifts to Thomas Tuchel as the kind of long-term appointee to maybe replace Nagelsmann. And then they maybe have to pull that forward because Tuchel suddenly gets sacked from Chelsea and he's now a potential appointment for any of Bayern's main rivals in the Champions League.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because you could go a little bit further back and say, like, if you return to that sort of Salihamidzic Flick argument that seemed to go on forever and the kind of the tension between the two, and how it almost seemed like Flick's decision to leave Bayern Munich accelerated their plans with Nagelsmann in itself. Because, like, there are certain clubs where, and this isn't in Germany, this is everywhere, where it matters first and foremost what you do as a coach, like as a technical coach, as a kind of a technocrat. And there are other clubs, and there's probably about four or five of these in the world at any one time, where, like Manu said, you have to be a statesman too. And it felt like what's happened to Nagelsmann is he's absolutely ready to coach a club of Bayern Munich's resources and abilities and, collection of stars. But being ready to exist in that atmosphere is a completely different issue. And it feels like, and the one thing is, and this will be shown in sort of over the next 5-10 years, what happens to someone like this when you go to a club of Bayern's size and it doesn't go well? Like, do you then have to go, like, not back to like a Hoffenheim level, but then do you have to return to kind of, I'm sure there'll be Premier League offers for him in the summer. No,
Seb, you end up the Wolfsburg head coach. That's what happens to you.
Sometimes you win the title of a
player. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that, right? So, like,
can I?
What's the black mark here? Like, what's the kind of the long-term reputational damage? I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Too.
The kind of ironic thing here is that, you know, Bayern are potentially trying to jump the shark here by getting Tuchel before Real Madrid entice him. But by doing so, they sacked Nagelsmann, who, if you remember, is someone that Real Madrid have been courting for years and years and years and tried to sign back when he was at Hoffenheim, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it certainly made moves to try and bring him in. Listen, guys, before we kind of crack on, I've got Phil Boney here who'd like to join us. I've sent him an invitation to speak. Who, of course, is one of the voices of the Bundesliga commentator, as well as other things. So once he accepts an invitation to speak, which I have sent Phil, if you are listening, I'll send it again, he'd like to jump in. So he'll jump in at some point, but Manu, I'll let you kind of crack on, and I'm sure Phil can say hello when he gets the invitation. Oh.
Can we talk about Thomas Tuchel?
Yeah, man.
Because...
Oh, Phil's here.
I'm not 100% sure that Bayern Munich are actually solving their problems that they had with Nagelsmann off the field by hiring Thomas Tuchel. Mm. Because you remember how it went at Dortmund, you remember how it went at PSG, and you remember how, at Chelsea, you know, like, he still remembered there very positively. But I almost wonder if they're getting rid of one coach who is not willing to create controversy and just the opening the door for another coach who's pretty much doing the same, is going to do the same thing. Mm. You know, he's not always an easy person to deal with either. No. We all remember how it went at Dortmund, of course, but I almost wonder if they're doing themselves, if they're really doing themselves a favor here.
Yeah. Phil, do you want to jump in and let us know what you think?
I'll just jump in and say, what the hell is going on tonight?
welcome to our slumber party.
It's like the most amazing, catastrophic, earthquakey sort of. Yeah, this is going to send. Obviously, I'm arriving late to this particular party that's been hosted brilliantly by yourself and the other guys, and I've been listening for some time on the side. We've got to think about how this affects Bayern's aspirations towards the Champions League, because basically, if you've won the Bundesliga for the last 10 years, you don't give a dog's whatever about it. Their title. This season that they have in their crosshairs is the Champions League, and they've been doing really well. And all of a sudden, you've put a hole in your own boat. You've told everybody basically, we're sinking. It's all going really badly, and we're going to get this life-saving guy in, whoever it might be. I mean, obviously Tuchel is the big talk. But think about that. How that works. On the aspirations, thoughts, and motivation of the players themselves. All of a sudden, you've got the ground from underneath you has been removed. Okay, of course, you're still a professional and you're going to give your best and there's all that kind of thing that goes on. But I'm amazed that they did it at this point in the season. This this could just take the earth out from underneath them. They play Dortmund when we come back after the international break, a loss against Dortmund, and then you're against Man City. Oh my God! Against Pep Guardiola, who knows how Bayern tick, because he made them tick like they do. Okay, they changed it up a little bit since Nagelsmann arrived, but hello, this is going to be this has so massive proportions. I can't even begin to get my head around the whole thing, and I'm sure you guys are the same.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that kind of what continues to baffle me, because you know we just talked about Nagelsmann's track record at the club and whether this is justified, but you could even kind of turn it around and say, why the hell would Thomas Tuchel want the job right now? He's got Dortmund coming up after the international break. He's then got a double header against Manchester City, and you know there's this assumption that he's this kind of tactical mastermind, and I think he's a very good head coach. I think he's one of the best in the world, but he's going to really have to hit the ground running there. And at what point does he turn around and say, I want this job right now ahead of these three games that will either make or break my season?
So, come on, he's a few more details, guys.
You can all go with the squad they've got is good enough, and the quality is there. And, you know, let's not make any bones about it. But fans kick around the whole, oh, he's Bayern forever and he's Dortmund forever. No, we're all like, we want to further our own career. And if by coming into a new job and kicking the ass of a former club that you work for, it would be brilliant. He'd dine out on that for years, because it's about his professional kudos. So if Tuchel comes in, beats Dortmund, goes on to take Bayern to the Champions League, he becomes a legend. And we mustn't ever forget that. Forget loyalties. This is modern football where the mercenary aspect is huge, but that's part of modern football, and certainly my point of view. You can't blame people for being as good as they want to be, or trying to be as good as they want to be. And if you come in and you take over Bayern München, one of the best clubs in the entire world at football, and then you steer them through a dodgy phase, you beat your closest rivals Dortmund and take them to the Champions League, you are a legend forever.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I'll let you jump in, Manu, but the thing that just still kind of baffles me is that Tuchel's taking on a squad here that essentially is halfway in the process of being transformed by Nagelsmann. The club has spent a lot of money on signing players that he wants to bring in. Is it not a bit odd to just bring a head coach in at this time?
Yeah, no, but like the thing is with Bayern, right? This is always a big and a really important thing to remember, is that they sign players regardless of who the head coach is. So in many cases, for example, they then expect the head coach to work with these players and essentially use the system that has been in place already. And in this case, you know, it goes back to Louis van Gaal, who basically is the godfather of the current Bayern Munich tactical lookout, the system and the way they play. And then, of course, you know, your Pienkes and then Pep Guardiola also left a little bit of a mark. But I think this, when you look at the players that were brought in, and there's a lot of examples where I think you can even point out and say that there's more reason why the club was unhappy with him, right? One thing that was just pointed out to me is that talent development. Ryan Gravenberg was brought in. Matisse Tell was brought in, right? And these players haven't really been given the time to develop under Nagelsmann. And I think this is another aspect that they're extremely unhappy about. Just to add to that a little bit further, right? And the other thing is, too, and I find this really fascinating. So Thomas Tuchel has now been living in Munich for weeks, which makes me think this is not something that has happened overnight. And look, Bayern Munich don't necessarily do things overnight. I think what happened here is that this just leaked before they wanted it to leak. There was supposed to be a meeting tomorrow that has been scheduled for a while, where the bosses were going to sit down with Nagelsmann and discuss this. And that's when it was supposed to come out, right? The way it goes, sometimes things leak a little bit faster, which is why we're now doing this space on a Thursday night rather than on a Friday, I guess. But irregardless, it's the same. The story happens the same way. And I think, you know, the more I think of it, the more I think it's actually consequential, because you do it at a time when you have this period off, right? You can sort of reset and you can sort of bring in a coach who you think is maybe tactically better suited for yourself. It's still insane because, like, they paid 25 million euros to sign Nagelsmann from Leipzig, right? But, like, Tuchel coming in now, it makes a lot of sense for them, I think. It doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense for everyone, but I think it makes a lot of sense for them. And, yeah, here we are. On Monday, apparently, he will lead the first session.
I think people underestimate Thomas Tuchel's management abilities. Like, I've thought that ever since he took Paris Saint-Germain to a Champions League final. I mean, if you can take that circus to the brink of a Champions League with those...
From the circus to FC Hollywood.
That was probably the best training for him, right? PSG, to lead Bayern.
And also, look at the cast of coaches who have failed to replicate or equal what he did there. And... You know, I know it's not Paris Saint-Germain, but Chelsea's not easy politically either. He dealt with an awful lot of, you know, towards the end of his Chelsea career, that was a very unique situation, of course. But he took a very underpowered Chelsea side to a Champions League, to a European Cup they never should have got anywhere near. And also, if you're a Bayern Munich player now, and say you're someone like Thomas Müller, for instance, you've won absolutely everything, you're one of the most decorated players in European football history. You have someone that comes through the door who has already won the European Cup. I think that's like, if you're Pep Guardiola and you're preparing to face Bayern Munich in the next round of the Champions League, I think you'd much rather be facing Nagelsmann's side than someone who commands respect in that way that's very, very precious. And also, we know about his technical abilities, but he has a credibility there that is very, very powerful. I'm very much on the fence about what this appointment looks like over the long term, even over the medium to long term. Over the short term, I love it. Like, if I was a Bayern Munich fan, regardless of like how my club's behaved and whether they've done things in the correct order or whether they've been deferential enough to Julian Nagelsmann, I don't know. But in terms of what the product is likely to look like on the pitch, it's kind of intoxicating, the idea of it. And like, you know, I think if you look at, we've mentioned Ryan Gravenberch, Mazraoui again, obviously injuries have been difficult, but another sort of disappointing season. If you look at sort of the lack of production or lack of relative production out of the attacking position, I'm thinking about Serge Gnabry's performances dropping off over the last, from what they were a couple of years ago. Leroy Sané has been, it always feels like he's booming or busting during the season. He's never on a kind of an even keel. It always seems to be that way. Sadio Mane, like, well, there's some reports in, I forget which German outlet published them today, but about how he doesn't look fit or whatever. Like, if you're able to get a solid, stable level of performance out of all of those players and a level of contribution from all of them evenly throughout the rest of the season. God, that's a strong side. You don't even know to play that Bayern Munich team with or without Lewandowski, regardless.
Although, yeah. I have to kind of jump in here and point out that because I did a piece on that last week on whether Bayern Munich needs Harry Kane or not.
Will you stop trying to sell Harry Kane to Bayern Munich?
Well, it could be more likely now. Apparently, he broke a goal-scoring record today. It was pointed out to me by Twitter. But more importantly, they've actually have more players contributing in double-digit scoring this season than they had over the entire course of last year. And that includes actually higher goal output by, I know Serge Gnabry has a bad rap among a lot of people, but he's on a higher pace this year than last year.
Same for Sané.
And I only noticed because like I dug into the numbers last week, right? But like I was actually kind of surprised by it too. They had four players that scored more than 10 goals. This year they already have 5, right? Mm. So they actually, in fairness, in Nagelsmann's defense, he actually managed to compensate the 50 goals that now Lewandowski scored and actually distributed them among more shoulders. And those players have been scoring more goals. And they might end up with 6.
This is kind of what I was talking about earlier on when I said maybe he deserves a bit more benefit of the doubt here in the you know, he just lost arguably the best number 9 in the world. Maybe Seb might disagree with that, obviously, in terms of Harry Kane or whoever else. But, you know, but I think there's maybe a point to that. There's maybe an argument to be made that maybe while Bayern are going through the motions and they are actually picking up the results and maybe on paper they look just as good as they were last season, I think you could definitely make the argument, and you know, Seb kind of alluded to this a couple of minutes ago, that you look across that entire front line, and we actually talked about this in the main show and the main podcast on Monday, in the sense that to me, the difference between Dortmund and Bayern since the turn of the year is that Dortmund seem to have these backup players that are just desperate to run through walls for Eden Terzic. You know, you look at Marius Wolf, you look at Emre Can, even guys like Mo de Hood who are just happy to come in and just suddenly look like all-star players. And you look at Bayern Munich and it feels like no one's really that interested in being and stepping up and becoming that star player. Maybe that's just a cultural thing for a club that for so many years have just relied on Robert Lewandowski to be the leader, to be the poster boy, to be the guy who steps up and kind of takes on that pressure. And maybe the likes of Serge Gnabry, Kingsley Coman, Leroy Sané, perhaps the most obvious one, just aren't exactly comfortable doing that. But it makes me feel like, you know, that we still haven't got to the end of this process to kind of conclude whether it's working or not. That's the thing that's still kind of, you know, that's still a kind of itch in the back of my head here. And maybe it's just the inner contrarian in me, but I do feel like I'm going to have to be the kind of devil's advocate here and making the point that, yeah, Thomas Tuchel's great. He's got a fantastic track record. But, and I say this as someone who doesn't really entirely believe the reputation that he has, that he self-destructs after a certain period of time at every club, because I think you could look at his time at Dortmund, at PSG, at Chelsea, and they're all completely different factors, and he left each club under completely different circumstances. But he still hasn't proven that he can be the kind of steady hand, the statesman, the long-term appointment for a club like Bayern Munich or Real Madrid or whatever else you want to call it. He still hasn't proved that. So
do we think maybe the era of like the dynastic long-term manager, not in the Ferguson Wenger sense, but like in the idea that when you appoint someone, you're getting 5 good years. Like I don't feel like the pace of the modern game, and I mean like, I don't mean on the pitch, I mean just generally the news cycle and the kind of the attritional nature of being in football at the top level now, it doesn't feel like it's conducive to working at a big club for very long anymore. Like, I'm not saying that everyone has to become a sort of, you know, a 1-year, 18-month coach, but the idea that maybe if you were to get 3.5 years out of someone like Thomas Tuchel before a deterioration of a relationship, then that would feel like quite a good return. Also, can I, just because it's one of my favourite topics at the moment, I love that you mentioned Marius Wolf, just because Marius Wolf, like, a year ago, I remember watching him playing for Dortmund and just thinking, why are you there? Like, why? What are you doing in that side? And Edin Terzic, to his credit, Marius Wolf has been absolutely fantastic since the World Cup. I think probably the high point of his season was that sort of outside of the right 40-yard three ball that he played for Marco Reus against Leipzig a couple of weeks ago. He's become an excellent player, and it feels like that's one of the things that's missing at Bayern. Like, you're not seeing with the statistics that Manny mentioned earlier aside, which surprised me. I still don't feel that the tenor performance from some of those individuals represents improvement or even anything less than a regression. I would say that, like, Serge Gnabry's statistics may be very good, but I don't see him as the player he was 18 months ago. I would say Sané has had moments, but is in a similar sort of category. And at Dortmund, you have these guys who, like Marius Wolf, yes, but Daniel Marlin has become a lot better than I thought he was going to be. Adeyemi, pre-injury, was starting to play some of the best football he's had since moving to Germany. And it's kind of that culture of improvement, which I think you still need to have at Bayern. And I think Tuchel can probably deliver that. I think, you know, Chelsea players that that worked under him, you know, someone like Mason Mount was pretty good under him. Kai Havertz played a lot better than he's currently playing now at Chelsea. So there's kind of, I see it. Like, I think I'm trying to, as the space has developed, I'm trying to talk myself into liking this as a decision. I'm hearing myself. I think that's what I must be doing.
But the issue is, for me, is that he had that runway at Chelsea to prove himself. And he did, obviously. He won the Champions League. So, you know, and that's exactly what he could maybe do at Bayern Munich this season. But it did come tumbling down at Chelsea. And, you know, maybe there were other factors involved there. But it wasn't just that they brought a new owner in and he didn't like him. Things were beginning to fall apart long before that. So it's not as if it was 100% all the way and then, you know, a new boss came in and didn't like him, so he brought in his own guy. The players did begin to underperform. The tactics did begin to stop working. And I'm not really here to badmouth Tuchel because I'm a big fan of his, and I certainly praised him when he moved to Chelsea, and I thought, you know, he'd had a lot of bad press after what happened at PSG. But I mean, I get what you're saying, Seb, in terms of, you know, modern football's maybe different and maybe we do have to kind of chop and change from time to time. But I would say that if there's any club in European football that I think would probably still stick to the old guard as much as they can, or the old way of doing things, and out of all these kind of super clubs, I think it is Bayern Munich. And
yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Yeah.
No, it kind of reminds me of, I just had this thought, and I'm old enough to remember this. I'm going to terribly age myself here, but Jupp Heynckes was at Bayern Munich twice, right?
Mm.
And the first time he was fired, this was in 1991. And for years afterwards, Uli Hoeneß said that was his biggest mistake that he's made as Bayern Munich sporting director or manager, as we call him in German, right? I wonder if we, in 2 or 3 years, going to have the same discussion about this.
Well, of course we are, because Real Madrid are going to go hire Nagelsmann in the summer and win the Champions League. We do probably have to wrap this up because we're coming up in an hour, but how about we go around the four of us and have our kind of closing thoughts? I'll let Phil jump in because he hasn't said anything in a while, and then we'll maybe try and wrap this up.
Well, it's kind of impossible to get a word in edgeways, really, because Seb's going well and Manu's going well. You yourself are doing all right.
You're a commentator. You're supposed to jump in at the right moment.
Yeah, well, you know, I try and wait for an appropriate gap, but it's, you know, this is Bayern Munich we're talking about. Anyone can come in with that squad and do things, and I'm sure that they'll be expecting the new coach bounce to come in. It's not as if Thomas Tuchel is new to this whole thing. We were talking about you guys were talking about Dortmund, about how Emre Can, certainly Marius Wolf, really good performances. They're hitting some form. The thing about Bayern is I think hanging it all on Lewandowski is wrong, because, you know, Choupo-Moting has been doing a really good job for them. The fact that he's injured recently has been a bit of a problem for them. But they need that central figure up front, whether it's Lewandowski or Choupo-Moting. I don't think that's the problem. But the problem is, as has always been with Bayern, especially when you've got players. I mean, if you go back 5 years, when you've got like Robben and Ribéry out on the wings, nobody wants to sit on the bench. There's a certain amount of friction that's going on there. And when the other clubs are stronger. And in this case, it has been Union. It has been Dortmund. They've been matching them pace for pace. It's not been a dominant Bayern performance. They've been doing it for 10 years. Where do you go after 10 years, 11 years, 12 years? It gets slightly stayed as the thing goes. And they now have a transitional period and they've made it worse. And I think they've undermined them, their own legend, as it were, because they've built themselves now a trap to fall in. They've taken the carpet out from underneath themselves. And if it goes wrong this season and Dortmund pip them to the post, because it's always about the consistency in the Bundesliga. We all know that. It's not how Dortmund play against Bayern. It's not how Dortmund play against Schalke. It's how they play against Mainz on a Wednesday evening, or how they play against Bochum and that 1-1 unexpected draw that they get. That's the key. And they haven't been getting that this season. You cannot, you simply cannot go for 11 years dominating the Bundesliga. Sooner or later, there has to become a weak phase. And I think they've struck one. They've realised they've struck one. They want to change it up. But it's not necessarily about this season, which will hurt them for the Champions League. It's about next season and the seasons after. And that is what is exciting about the whole situation.
Who wants to go next? Seb, Manu?
What are we doing? Are we summing up what we think about it, or are we?
I feel like this has just descended into almost like a university debate society. So if you want to just give your closing thoughts,
I guess something.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I tried to do. Just give up my overall thing. Sorry, Manu.
It was so all encompassing that I didn't know how to add to what Phil said. It felt like it dropped the mic for all four of us at the same time. I'm not following that. What I will say is I'd be very, very surprised if he ends up, a Nagelsmann that is, of course, if he were to end up at another, like, super club. I don't see him going to Real Madrid anytime soon, even though there'll probably be a vacancy there. PSG look like, I don't give Christoph Galtier long at PSG, I put it that way. Mm. I don't know where he goes. I think he probably sits on a beach with a stack of Lee Child novels for 4 months, yeah. Just because... I don't know, like what the kind of the decompression period after Bayern's going to be like emotionally, to be under that kind of strain and then to come out. I don't think you can go straight into another job. And I've been speaking to a few Tottenham fans who are kind of hopeful that he might turn up at White Hart Lane. I'm not sure I see that. I think it would be a wonderful appointment, but I feel like it might be a bit too optimistic. But it's interesting. I just think one thing that we did say is like, it wouldn't be a surprise if he were to be a kind of another Jupp Heynckes in the sense that he were to reappear at Bayern in a few years, because I think that's another trend too. Like, just because you fail at a specific moment in time at a club doesn't necessarily mean that with a bit of reputational surgery and a few years passing, you can't go back. It's not like the old days, really, in that sense. Mm. So I don't think his door is closed to Bayern forever.
Seb, just to jump in, Nagelsmann's the kind of coach that would go back to Hoffenheim, save them, take them up next season, up the table. I mean, that's the kind of challenge that he will appreciate.
I don't see that at all.
And I actually think he'd be great at Tottenham, because I actually think Nagelsmann works best when he's punching upwards. He's working at a club that has to prove itself.
He has to punch in all sorts of directions at Spurs. Upwards, sideways, downwards, also, Antonio Conte has just burnt the entire house down, so there's not much left.
Spurs. Just to jump in here, I think that would make sense. You look at Jupp Heynckes, but also more recently, Roger Schmidt, what he did, right? He went abroad. And sort of rebuild your reputation. I don't think he's going back to Hoffenheim. I think that's not going to happen. He's going to go and, take some time off and then probably go abroad, because that seems to be the thing to do for German coaches that have failed at the biggest clubs in Germany, right? They go abroad and they rebuild their reputation there. And I think that's what's going to happen. So Tottenham is not out of the question, but it could also be something like, Benfica are not looking. Well, they might. They might look for a coach in the summer because Roger
Schmidt. You could see him like turn right? up at Marseille, Manu, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Something like that. I didn't think this was going to go the way that I ended up sounding like Julian Nagelsmann's agent on this, but I feel like I can't believe we're talking about this guy's a failure and that he's going to struggle for jobs. He hasn't technically lost anything yet. You know, he's still joint top in the Bundesliga. He's still one of the favourites for the Champions League. I honestly think if he does get sacked tonight or tomorrow, I think he's probably going to feel like he has to prove himself very quickly. I think there'll be chairmen and chief executives around European football who'll look at his records he didn't do anything wrong. Now, maybe
have to remember this is Bayern, though. This is Bayern. And they sacked Felix Magath after winning the domestic double, and it still wasn't good enough, and they let him go. You know, the expectations are massive. Massive at Bayern, because they are massive.
But what's maybe not good for Bayern is good enough elsewhere. You know, we've talked about a number of the head coaches who've moved on elsewhere. I mean, I actually think Niko Kovac is maybe a good example here. I know his reputation still, or the jury's maybe still out on him because Wolfsburg seemed to go up and down, but he stepped away from it. He did fantastically well in France, and he was able to kind of bounce back in that regard. Mm. But I think there'll be Premier League clubs lining up to hire Nagelsmann, to be perfectly honest with you. I think he'd do a good job there. And I don't know. I honestly don't. I don't think like something like Real Madrid. Maybe in terms of PR, it doesn't work. But you also got to remember that Real Madrid's current head coach is the guy who did a pretty average job at Everton. So they don't really seem to care about the previous job he did before that. And they've obviously had their eye on Nagelsmann for quite some time.
And Real, like Bayern, are opportunistic. They might just say, "Okay, he's available. Let's go for it."
Yeah. And Nagelsmann speaks very good English. We mustn't forget that. So that opens many doors.
Exactly. Well, are we done here, guys? Or does anyone else have anything else to add?
No, I think this is perfect.
Okay, great. Well, listen, guys, thanks for listening. Everyone who has, I'm hoping you are all subscribers to the Gegenpressing newsletter and podcast. Yes, I am getting that in before we finish up, but you can, of course, find Seb on the Tifo Football Show, the podcast every week, videos, a lot of athletic stuff as well. And Phil Boney, who, Phil, am I right in saying you'll probably be the man coming through our ears for the Bayern Dortmund game?
No, actually, I actually got the Schalke Dortmund game recently. So I think it's possibly either Dan or it could also be Derek Ray who's pulled the lucky straw on that one.
Oh, perfect. Well, not a bad substitute. But yeah,
I was just saying, I don't. We try not to let anybody down on the Bundesliga because you know it's even more mad than it ever was. I mean, this season we're all, regardless of where your hopes, dreams, and aspirations are, if you're gonna win it on the last day, as I'm sure you'll all appreciate. I mean, there's nothing worse than having a team win it by just before Easter.
Oh, yeah, that goes without saying. I'm sure some Bayern Munich fans would have preferred to have a quiet Thursday night, but for the rest of us, it's been good fun, and it's been a great season so far. So, yeah, I'm just going to wrap this up now. Thanks again for everyone who listened. Thanks to the guys who joined in. I know we had a lot of people request to speak and ask questions, but it was a little overwhelming, and I think it would have just turned into chaos. So I do apologise for that. But, yeah, thanks for listening. I'll try and download this and maybe get up on the podcast feed. So hopefully more people can listen. But yeah, as ever, thanks very much and good night.